From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of June, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. We'll hear from Gary Schnittke about tillage passes and nitrogen rates. We'll discuss the USMCA. The review is coming up starting July 1. And then we'll turn our attention to the agricultural energies with Dan O'Brien and the weather with Don Day. All on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin now joins us. Hi, Naomi. Thank you for being with us again on this Tuesday.
Yes, thanks for having me.
You know, something that we don't follow very well here, but because you're in Wisconsin, I want to ask about, there was a milk report out. Is that correct? What did it tell us?
Yes, yesterday afternoon's milk production report came out, and it has been bearish month after month after month. So we have ample milk production in the country. So on the report yesterday, it showed that milk production for the month of May was up 2.3% from a year ago. Now, for milk and milk production, anytime the number is a percent higher, that's considered big. So when it's 2.3% higher, that is really a large increase in production. And so not only are the cows, you know, doing a great job of producing milk, but we added 10,000 dairy cows to the herd. And since the end of December, in the United States, the dairy herd has grown 99,000 head in 5 months. So we have an abundance of milk, but thankfully demand is strong, demand for dairy products and the powder products for sure. But unfortunately, that has allowed nearby milk contract class 3 prices to dip below $16, which is very, very not great when it comes to milk pricing. So that's what's happening on the dairy parlor, so to speak. Now, we do have a cold storage report coming out on Friday. So we'll see if that's going to show us anything in terms of what cheese inventory and butter inventories have been. They had been on the lighter side because demand has been so strong, but we'll see if that trend is continuing or not. But hopefully, we get some fresh demand news here sooner than later to help, take up some of this abundance of milk production that we've seen, and keeping an eye on exports too. That'll be a big one. Of course, we send a lot of our dairy exports, not only overseas to Asia, but just across the borders into Canada and Mexico.
Speaking of Canada and Mexico, the USMCA will start a review process. It's mandatory after 6 years of being in place, July 1. Have you thought much about it and the uncertainty surrounding it as it's related to its renewal, which would push it out another 16 years?
Yeah, and that actually, it is becoming such a factor that needs to be more on everyone's radar. July 1st will be here before you know it. President Trump has said that he doesn't necessarily think he needs to potentially sign it, but it would still, of course, I think, be of benefit to all three countries if it happens. Of course, Mexico, Canada, huge trade partners for U.S. agriculture, U.S. produce. We send, obviously so much corn to Mexico, ethanol to Canada, dairy products going to both countries. We are sending pork over to Mexico. So it's an important document, that in my opinion, it would be helpful if we could just have it signed so we have the certainty. And I think that was what your opening statement was. It's the uncertainty that gets the market spooked, because I recall, and I really think that when they were drafting this the last time, I think it was in 2020, Mexico, I think that's when they started to turn towards Brazil for some short-term imports. And then even also when we were doing recent negotiations with tariffs, Mexico just kind of gave a little bit of a warning shot to remind us that they can buy grain from other countries as well. So we need to keep an eye on that. So we'll have a busy week with reports between the acreage report, quarterly stocks report, and then we'll turn the calendar and we'll have to see what becomes of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and what President Trump decides to do.
If I remember correctly, negotiated in 2019, and you were correct, Mexico did turn to Brazil. I recall that, too. And then, of course, put into place, as you pointed out, I think in 2020. Other things we ought to discuss today. We've been following closely with the meteorologists, for instance, the heat in France and the issues that they might be suffering there. What impact might that have?
Yes. So the heat wave in France, it's pretty significant. So I just looked on weather.com earlier today, like 105 degrees, and they're not at all normally that hot. And it's not just in France. It lingers into other parts of Europe. But what I did go back and look at was just, I tried to remind myself, you know, how much corn does the European Union grow? And they are expected to grow 57.5 million metric tons of corn this year. And they use everything that they grow, and they actually have to import over 19 million metric tons of corn. So I thought, well, jeepers, if this situation continues with that heat wave that's going all across Europe, that might be a factor to where we see Europe have to import more corn. Hopefully it would be U.S. corn that they import. But if it is a bigger issue where they have a bigger drop in production, well, then that, of course, that would make the balance sheets a little bit different on the global ending stocks. And for those kind of curious who are listening, so France is the largest producer of corn in the European Union. They produce 13.3 million tons. Poland is the second largest producer. Romania and then Hungary are the bottom of the top four there. So it's something to watch, not just corn. It could be also with wheat. The El Nino pattern that's going through right now would be better for U.S. weather, but it is spelling hot and dry conditions for Europe. And then we also need to keep an eye on what would happen with India. It can be hot and dry for India as well. And as you know, India, the largest population on the planet now, and all of the food they grow, they are using between wheat and rice and other grains and oilseeds. So weather always has to be watched.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's Naomi Bloom. She is with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin, online at totalfarmmarketing.com. Our theme music here at the Closing Market Report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Chasing maximum corn yields could be costing farmers money. A review of over a decade's worth of Midwestern farm data reveals that applying extra nitrogen and making additional tillage passes often fail to pay for themselves. 11 years of data collected from farm fields across the Midwest clearly shows two things. A farmer can occasionally increase corn yields by upping the nitrogen rate above the MRTN and doing an extra tillage pass, but they'll lose money doing it, says Gary Schnittke from the University of Illinois.
And that is a message that we consistently find. If you do increase the N rates above that MRTN, you sometimes, and that is a key, sometimes increase yields on, and so, but you don't increase profitability. And that makes sense. That N rate calculator was built around profitability.
The N-rate calculator was developed by land-grant universities. MRTN stands for maximum return to nitrogen. It optimizes the total pounds of all nitrogen sources applied to a corn crop based on both the price of the nitrogen and the expected price of corn. Sticking with the MRTN and doing fewer tillage passes pays, says the FarmDoc team member, ag economist.
If you do a tillage pass, you do have a higher yield than if you don't do a tillage pass on average in our results, but it doesn't cover the cost of doing this, doing the pass. So, you know, an emphasis on returns rather than yields is what we need to be seeing, particularly in this high cost, low price environment.
If you'd like to learn more, you may watch the FarmDoc Practices That Pay webinar on YouTube at youtube.com/@FarmDoc. You know, tomorrow is the annual Weed Science Field Day right here on campus at the University of Illinois. Aaron Hager puts the program together. He says it is for farmers and retail applicators.
It's a self-guided tour. We'll have signs in front of all the plots with the treatments on there. There'll be a booklet that has all the experiments in there. So signs will be on the first replicate. But if somebody would like to see, well, how did that particular treatment perform in the second and third replicates, you could look that particular trial up in the field aid book and then go look at the individual replications at your leisure.
Aaron Hager is an extension weed scientist at the University of Illinois. The annual Weed Science Field Day is on campus tomorrow. You can find all the details on our website. Look for the article in the list of articles. It should be the first one there, or one of the very first ones, and it'll tell you how to arrive, what time. It's early in the morning, and that you need to bring a $10 bill with you. The United States-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, or USMCA, is set to undergo a mandatory review starting July 1. Two of the three USMCA nations, Mexico and Canada, have said they'd like it to continue. However, U.S. President Donald Trump is not so sure and said so when speaking to reporters at the June G7 meeting in France.
I would rather leave it unsigned. I'd rather have it terminated.
Although Mr. Trump, in the same back and forth, said he would probably sign it, he also said he views it as expiring immediately.
I would prefer not having an agreement, but I'm open to doing it. We'll see what happens.
So as of now, it's just going to stick around for 10 years. You're okay
We're
with
not,
that?
No, it's not sticking around. It'll be terminated. In
after,
other words,
after a decade.
It expires.
Yeah, in a decade.
It expires. Yeah. I prefer that.
In the first paragraph,
I view it as possibly expiring immediately.
That's all fairly confusing, but mostly accurate, as the terms of the original USMCA were laid out. It sets forth the 6-year review starting July 1, the 10-year sunset clause should the parties be unable to come to an agreement upon the review, and a final clause that would allow any of the three nations to exit or terminate their portion of the agreement, but for the other two parties to continue on. As it happens, Mexico and Canada have been planning for that possibility, says the president of Mexico. Claudia Sheinbaum, in response to a reporter, says the two have been strengthening their relationship and even building a new route which bypasses the United States. Sheinbaum says Canada has been investing in a Mexican port that would allow for more maritime trade.
So
we are strengthening the relationship between Mexico and Canada, and additionally, evidently, both countries want the trade agreement to be maintained. The president of Mexico goes on to discuss how USMCA was ratified by the Congresses in each of the three nations and is therefore law. On that point, the U.S. Senate Finance Committee maintains it is unclear if President Trump has the legal authority to terminate the trade agreement using the 6-month out clause without the agreement of the United States Congress. Now, for his part, the Prime Minister of Canada, Mark Carney, believes the cross-border USMCA integrations to be good, but says because the ambitions of the U.S. president have changed, the review process is already under pressure.
I mean, what we're seeing right now is that we have an agreement. We have that integration. Tariffs are being put up in a series of areas that are not, they're violations of the agreement. I've called a spade, might as well. And so there's a question about whether that alignment is still there. Can we really rely ultimately on what's written in the agreement, what's in a dispute settlement mechanism? And that's a very different environment than was there previously.
President Trump negotiated the USMCA in his first term, but has since become more U.S.-centric in his trade stance. The Cato Institute, a free market think tank in Washington, D.C., in a June 1 article, concludes President Trump's refusal to extend that agreement is not its death knell, but it's also far from harmless. Since USMCA went into force, Mexico and Canada individually have surpassed China as the number one and two trade partners of the United States. The automotive and agricultural sectors are particularly interwoven across all three economies. time now to take a look at the agricultural energies. Dan O'Brien is here. He's with Kansas State University Extension and an agricultural economist. Hi, Dan. Tell me about ethanol trade across the planet and domestic usage in the last month or so.
Well, I think following the trend we'd seen in the that was signaled by the USDA in that June 11th WASDE report, they had lowered the amount of corn usage for ethanol by about 25 million bushels down to 5.575 billion. We're seeing generally level usage of ethanol during a time when if we're going to have strong usage seasonally, this would be it. So we're holding steady in terms of ethanol usage in the bigger picture, still online to produce about 16.5 billion gallons of ethanol at plant capacity. At least when you look at these numbers, you hope you're seeing the actual figures that come out of that, because ethanol plants have been known to go beyond capacity. But anyway, it looks like we're producing at about 89.3% of plant capacity at 201 ethanol plants. 18.5 billion gallons capacity, as I mentioned, about 16.5 billion gallons of actual production. So moving pretty steadily along. I have seen some changes. Well, we've certainly seen changes in the prices for corn that are paid at ethanol plants here in the as we look at this on as of June 23rd today as we speak. The average price in Illinois for corn at an ethanol plant is $4.17. Got a range of just over $4, about $4.02 up to $4.38. Compare that, and that is certainly right in the heart of the central eastern corn belt. Out here in the western corn belt, we're at a little bit higher, $4.19.5 to $4.41.5, an overall average price of $4.27. And what's odd about that, and as I've been watching it anyway, that Kansas had been lagging quite a bit, 10, 20 cents or more of what Illinois, Indiana, and the Eastern Corn Belt was paying for prices, but for corn at the plants. But now we've seen that flip back. Indiana still stands strong for a corn price at the plants, $4.38. Ohio, $4.50. So I guess as you go farther out into the eastern corn belt and with the situations that they face, both in terms of ethanol markets and corn supply, they actually have the highest corn prices paid at ethanol plants of any place in the country.
I suppose, though, the bottom line is, are the ethanol plants profitable in cents per gallon?
Still showing about 11 to about 15 cents a gallon. And so with that, we keep going forward, and we really haven't seen a prolonged period of losses, calculated losses in ethanol plants since back during the November 2024 through May 25 period. We've generally been showing profitability, and for an industry like that brings stability and perhaps even some growth.
Finally, before I let you go, what are crop conditions like across the state of Kansas?
The 2026 wheat harvest in Kansas, generally very poor, near record low harvested to planted acres percentage. So that's indicative of a lot of wheat that was failed. And in some of that, you've got double crop that's already happened going into that. And you can see it as you drive up and down the road. I think I think we've just had major storms in really all throughout the state, but especially in the west. Our version of a derecho or derecho, however the correct pronunciation is of that. And as you and I were talking before we came on the air, the market overall will ignore that, but it does cause a fair amount of crop damage. In general, they think, well, the rainfall outdoes the localized crop damage in general, but it's maybe the best thing to say is it's a busy time of year for the crop insurance people in a fair amount of Kansas, just because of all the storms that have happened and the adjustments and anticipation of yield damage that has occurred.
Hey, thank you much. That, of course, is Dan O'Brien. He is with Kansas State University Extension and an agricultural economist. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. You can find and listen to our programming anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Don Day is here. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. I hope you are doing as well as I am on this beautiful summer day.
Yeah, it is a beautiful summer day. Temperatures are pretty comfortable, and it's just nice to have summer start this way.
Well, it's great to have summer start this way. A little cool for crop conditions. Can you tell me where in the large part of the Corn Belt we actually stand as it's related to temperatures, probably moisture as well, and then what conditions might look like going forward?
Well, what we're going to see is still, for the rest of this week, some coolness. We're still going to see temperatures averaging a bit below average, really from everywhere from the east slopes of the Rockies into the Midwest and the Great Lakes. But there's a bit of a change coming as we get into, well, really, the middle to the end of the weekend and early next week, to where we're going to see the cool weather reverse. The warm weather's been out west. The out western part of the U.S. is going to see a pretty big cool down. In fact, cold enough, believe it or not, that this weekend there will be snow falling in the high mountains of Montana and Idaho and Wyoming. That cooler weather will push warmer air from the deserts into the Midwest and Corn Belt. So we're going to see right at the end of the month and into early July, some of that heat maybe folks have been waiting for to get some growing degree days accumulated. That's going to take us well into the first week of July.
Will that warm air spawn one of two things, either more thunderstorms and or because it's dry, maybe just humidity coming up out of the soils here?
Initially, I don't see a lot of precipitation in this warmer pattern developing for the first, let's say, for the last couple of days of June and into early July. It does look like it is going to be a pattern where the better moisture will stay north and west. I think later on, as we get into, let's say, the second and third week of July, we'll start to see that moisture tap from the southwest start to find itself moving in. But there is definitely a warmer and drier period that's coming.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again soon enough.
Sounds good.
Dunday is with Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Again, do visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. If you're thinking of joining us tomorrow morning for the Weed Science Field Day, you can find all the details there. They're in the article about the Weed Science Field Day. You do want to bring a $10 bill with you for your lunch. However, it is a fantastic day and a great day for any of you that are concerned about herbicides and their effectiveness across your own field. Check it out at willag.org and join Aaron Hager and company tomorrow morning on campus in Urbana, Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.